Warmans.
Hey everybody, welcome to Warmans, episode 2.3. With me, I got Bill and Jay. How you guys doing today?
I'm back.
Jay took a little hiatus, was possibly turned into a cyborg, we're not sure, but he is back. He does sound vaguely human.
Big yes, sir.
So today we've been gearing up for the Michigan Cup event that's coming up this Saturday. So we're going to chit chat about that a little bit. But first we have our main topic, and our main topic is something that I think applies to kind of everybody. And we're certainly not going to pretend we're experts on this, but I think we've all seen it one way or the other. And that's the concept of sort of winning and losing cultures. I think it's like, that's sort of a sports analogy. You hear that a lot, right? In sports. Yeah,
the Detroit Lions are exactly what I was thinking when we brought this topic up.
Yeah, I was thinking of like the Oakland Raiders. But yeah, the Lions for a long time definitely had a really bad losing culture. But as far as that, I guess that applying that idea to your local meta or your just yourself. And then kind of as a component of that, we also sort of were discussing the idea of playing up or down to your opponent. And how that kind of interfaces with the idea of a losing culture or a winning culture. So, but yeah, I guess we should just sort of define that idea. I mean, do you guys have any thoughts on just when I say winning, losing culture, besides sports stuff within the War Machine realm, you know, what ideas do you have?
Well, I think, go ahead, Bill.
No, go ahead.
Oh, okay. I think, you know, a lot of times, you know, and we're kind of, I guess if you want to say, blessed to have like the high caliber of players in our area that we do. We're, you know, just have a wide mix of multiple con winning players, and then rolled in at the same open game night, have, you know, a whole bunch of new players. And I think that, you know, some of the, when you're new, you deem people to be, you know, right or wrong, might be better players than you. Or you deem factions to be better than you. And you've kind of lost the game before you've even started to roll the dice. You're already kind of putting yourself behind, thinking that, you know, this guy's so much better than me, and not really, and dwelling on that, not really looking and analyzing and playing the game.
Yep. I think you pegged it about as good as you can.
I think like a component of a losing culture or a loser's culture or whatever you want to call it is that you find other things to blame for your losses before you look at your internally. And I think a lot of players struggle with that coming into this game, because there's not a lot of games out there that are as well balanced across the board, to be honest with you. You know, in this game, obviously their bad matchups exist, and there are models that are better than others for their points. We know that, but there is nothing else close out there. So if you come from, especially from another miniatures game, you come from like the 40K or Malifaux first edition or any of that shit. When you come into War Machine, it's very easy. You see players like, oh, well, Krix looks OP. They're supposed to be amazing. And then they just pick that up, or they pick up, you know, Legion, cause you know, someone told them Legion is broken or whatever. And they kind of hang on to these ideas that there's like just factions that are just better than others, or models that just automatically win 100% of games against other models. Right. Which is sort of just like losing culture stuff that they've brought from like another game or another experience to War Machine, right?
Yeah. I think a lot of your formative games, you know, if you're getting your ass kicked by somebody that's better than you, whatever faction they're playing is the one you grow up thinking is OP.
Yeah, that's 100% true. Even if you just start, like, you've never played another game besides War Machine, I agree with that.
Somebody's whipping your ass with Retribution or Kator.
Yeah.
You're complaining about how OP it is.
Yeah.
Right. And yeah, there's not too many, you know, I never really played 40K, but I did play Fantasy. And in every release, that would be the dominant army. And you know, I kind of got out of Fantasy. And maybe it's different. This was a couple editions ago. Because, you know, I'd play in a handful of tournaments. And then I think there's like 12 or however many armies are in the game, and it was like the same three every time, and it'd always be the newest released, like the three newest releases were just the ones being played, because you couldn't really even be on the table with them with some of the older editions. I mean, you could, but you'd have to be like maybe a far superior player. I don't know, it wasn't quite right. And the beauty of this is that, you know, no matter what, no matter who you're playing and what you're playing, you know, there's always that puncher's chance in this game, always, with a caster assassination. There's always, you know, if they slip, you always have, like, that chance to sneak out a win at any point. And that's what, you know, that's what made me kind of hang up my fantasy armies and take this over.
Yeah.
Because I love that.
Well, and I think kind of when you talked about, like, the idea of having a puncher's chance, I think if you are involved in a winning culture, you always believe you have a chance. And if you have a losing culture, then you talk yourself out of having chances all the time. And I guess really what we got to, like, focus down on, I think, is that those perceptions are created during games or even not during games, but just by, like, watching, like you said, like, oh man, you know, Jake Van Meter is just housing everybody. Legion's unbeatable. Right. You know, like, I thought that forever, right? I was just like, Jesus, this faction is ridiculous. And we used to give him shit about it all the time. You know, like, jokingly give him shit about it. And then you realize, you're like, well, no, they're good, but they're not better than Menoth. They're not better than Crypts. They're just good. It's just the player. The player's kicking your ass.
The next six times that you play Legion that aren't Jake Van Meter, you just roll them. You know, you roll that player, and you're like, well, hey, maybe it's not Veil 2. Maybe it's when Jake's running Veil 2 that's a problem.
Yeah. Yep. And so I guess the question is, or how to sort of narrow this down to how to change a culture, how to have, like, a winning culture in your meta or within yourself, is how do you change your internal sort of perception, and how do you sort of get out of the pattern of convincing yourself that other factors are involved with you losing, or even if you win games, but, like, they're difficult or whatever, like, you things you see, and then making perceptions based on those that are maybe not correct. How do you change that?
Yeah, that's a tough question. I would say avoid basing your opinions and things on, like, forums and stuff like that.
Yeah, avoid groupthink.
Right. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yep, that works.
So kind of stay away from, like, hearsay, and try to use your own sort of your value system. When you see things happen, like, your own experiences are more valuable to you than, say, just what randos say on, like, the forums.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're the one that's playing in your meta against the guys that you see consistently. None of the guys on the forums from, you know, multiple different countries are playing in your meta. So, I mean, you know, you play three games on a Friday night and something's working for you, and you hop on PP's forums and everybody says that sucks.
that might be one of the problems for why you have this losing culture, is if you're hopping on those forums.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, then you just got to say the hell with it. It works for me. It works for me here. It works for me now.
They're an incredibly negative entity for model analysis.
Yeah, I mean, I have mixed feelings about it. Like, I think forums are super valuable in a lot of ways.
Absolutely.
But I think at some point you have to realize that it's kind of just like having a winning or losing culture when it comes to forum posting. Mm-hmm. It's, are you part of the problem or are you part of the solution? Are you being open-minded and posting good advice and kind of being flexible to other people's ideas? Or are you just repeating shit that you heard people you think are better than you say? And are you just, oh, well, I had five bad games with this model, it must be bad.
Yeah,
are you blaming other things for your faults and then going out and, like, poisoning the group, you know, the group mind with that, right?
Right.
One thing I think when it comes to, like, winning and losing cultures, and sort of how to turn yourself from a Detroit Lions to a, you know,
Patriots. New England
Patriots. Yeah, right. Sure. You know, or Seattle Seahawks in a more recent analogy, you have to kick the crutch out from under yourself. That shit, when shit goes wrong, that it is, like, not your fault.
Yeah.
Right.
And that is so fucking, like, Bill and I have talked about this a bunch, because it, no matter what meta you play in, no matter what tournament you're watching, no matter what players you're watching, including very good players, there's lots of talk about, I got diced, or, you know, weird circumstance happened that wasn't my fault, et cetera, et cetera. Yeah. And I'm not saying those things you can't. You have to accept the idea that those things are uncontrollable, in the sense that like you can't make the dice roll the numbers you want them to roll. But it ultimately you put yourself in the position to win by your own actions. Like there's tons of things you can control in this game. Like you control exactly where your models go. You control whether you boost or not. And if you can say like 100%, I had a completely flawless game. I played perfectly and it just didn't happen because of dice. Fine. But how often can you actually?
Yeah, I don't think I've ever played a game I can say that. And I think most people probably can't.
Right. So, and it's super easy. I don't know what the term is, confirmation bias, where you just see like some spiky rolls in a turn and you just fixate on it and it mentally kind of go in the tank and just kind of, you know, you start to immediately tilt out and you sort of, your brain just sort of ignores all the other dice rolls in the game that roll like average or below average. You're just, you're fixating on that. And you're like, the fucking dice, bro. You know, and it's just, that's losing culture shit. Right?
Yeah,
right.
Whenever I feel myself going that way, I will actively look for bad dice rolls from that person to try and level myself out and like, no, those dice aren't magic. He just rolled a three, you know, even if it was a meaningless roll.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
And I would say, you know, I'm pretty, just being a competitive guy in general, I'm pretty guilty of that. And I would think that that was when I had the realization, I don't know, a little while ago, but when I first started, for sure, it just drove me insane. But, you know, because I can do math, I can do the probabilities in my head, and it just drove me nuts. But then, you know, I just realized that, you know, I wasn't sure, you know, random dice popped up and it swung things that, it, you know, mathematically maybe it shouldn't have. But then I just realized that I wasn't good enough to, obviously I wasn't good enough player to, you know, come back from that. And then when you watch more and more games, you can see guys where, you know, shitty shit happens to them and they come back from it like it was nothing.
Yeah.
And that's, and I mean, if you're talking about winning and losing culture, I think that's one of the number one things. Can bad things happen to you and you still win a game? Can you come back from it?
Yep.
Yeah.
And that goes, you know, if we're going to stick with the Lions, that's notoriously what they talk about with the Lions, is that, you know, when they start the season 5-1 or 6-0 and stuff like that, they'll find, you know, it's finding a way to lose. Either you don't believe you should win this game because the other guy's supposedly
better, or what? Definitely losing, a losing mindset that takes you there is not being able to close a game that you should win.
Right.
Yeah.
God, I've been doing a lot of that.
Well, there's sort of, there's a lot of facets to closing games, but I think as far as like having sort of that winning culture, I think you have to realize, I think it sort of success begets more success.
Right.
Mm-hmm. So sometimes it takes you a long time to get over that hump and start winning a little bit. And then suddenly you're like, oh, wait, I went from like getting my ass kicked by these local players to now I win like half my games against these guys. What happened? And sometimes it just, there's like an evolution that occurs that you just get better and you can't really put your finger on why. But I guess when I say success, like there's little successes too. Like you can be like, okay, so, you know, let me just pick a, like, you know, I love Cro-Mac and I'm new to the circle and this game's hard and Cro-Mac's hard. And, you know, I just want to get that perfect turn where I put Wild Aggression on the Stalker, double port it into a unit. I cast Sprint. I warp Berserk. I kill like five dudes, walk 3 inches, kill five dudes, back up 6 inches. I want that to happen, right? And then like you engineer that, you go through the perfect order of activations and it happens for the first time. And you're like, you got to internally go like, that's a fucking win.
Right.
Yep. Like whether you win or lose that game, like you got it right. And you got it right for the first time. And you have to kind of just, you know, like the ego doesn't handle repeated losses unless your brain can kind of make wins out of some of the situations, right? Yep. It's just the way we work. Like the idea of like just being like, yeah, you're shit. You fuck everything up all the time. Like nobody can really accept that internally. That's just not how like human beings operate, generally speaking.
No.
Even people who are really good at shit still find excuses for why they lost stuff. The difference is you got to be able to build yourself up. You got to be able to find the wins in anything, even getting housed.
Right.
You know, like, yep. this is a win because I learned that, whatever, double-ported stalkers kill my caster because I got within 12 inches of the front unit of stones. Never doing that again. Win. Yeah. Right?
Have something to take away from every game that's positive. Yeah. Don't just go, I got beat down and my dice are the reason and this is bullshit.
Yeah. Or like, that faction's OP, or I'm bad at this game because I can't remember this stuff, you know. Those things are all, like, the thing that used to frustrate me, and still probably frustrates me more than anything, is when I personally make a mistake that I should know better. And it's very rarely, like, my opponent's dice, they don't tilt me that often. If I do tilt, it's because I screwed up a plan that I had in my head. I'm like, oh, got this awesome plan. Let's initiate it. Whoops, skipped step B, went right to step C. And now my turn is in shambles and I'm like having a meltdown, right?
Yep.
That's the part I have to work on. And that's the sort of, that's like the losing culture of my game, is that particular point. But everybody kind of has a different point that they sort of catch on where they mentally sort of spiral because of something happening, right?
Yeah.
I think it's, you gotta be self-aware enough to identify that stuff. And that can be very difficult, but it's sort of a personal journey that will not only affect your game of War Machine, but probably just make you like better at life.
Yeah, probably. I think it's kind of like that power of positive thinking sentiment that if you keep telling yourself, you know, like, yeah, I messed that up, but here's how I can get better about it. Asking your opponent where you messed up is a good thing. And you know, frankly, when I think about it, when you have like one of those reflective moments, we'll say at the end of a game where you're like trying to figure out why you lost. If you arrive at your opponent's faction is better than you, better than yours, or they diced you or whatever, you're being an asshole to your opponent. So at least stop doing it for that reason, if nothing else. If not for your own benefit, to stop being a dick to the guy across from you on the table.
Yeah, I think if you vocalize that stuff at your opponent right at the end of a game, that's pretty bush league.
Yeah, or you run over to your buddy and talk about how this guy diced you or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, dudes hear that kind of crap.
Yeah, yeah. We're all guilty of it at some point.
Absolutely.
Dude. We're certainly not like...
No.
Coming.
I'm no saint on any of this shit.
No, we're not like preaching down from the mountain with, you know, our 15 commandments to not say. Like, we get it. You know, like, we've all done this shit, but it's the evolution of, you know, becoming a good player sort of coincides with being like a kind of a nice guy during games. Because I think if you're comfortable with the game, regardless of how it's going, because you feel confident in the fact that you can pull a win out, then your shoulders relax. You know, you make jokes with your opponent while you're playing and you have that kind of just sort of confidence that you exude. And sometimes like in a weird way, that's sort of intimidating. Like the guy across the table is super casual, just like seems unconcerned with your army and he's just doing his thing and just like having a good time. That's almost a weapon in a lot of ways.
If nothing else, it's a good poker face.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. You know, and I've seen a lot of good players who are like that, where, you know, bad things happen and they'll sort of grimace or like make a joke about your dice or whatever. And then just kind of, it doesn't seem to phase them. And you're like, so what am I missing? How is he going to kill me? Because he just lost like the unit that, you know, his whole army's built to kind of buff. And now what is he going to do? And then the guy's just like, doo, 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 just having a good time. And you're like, oh shit, what's going on? You know, like you start second guessing a little bit.
That's like the moment when you ask their caster's power and toughness.
Yeah, right. Right.
Their armor and defense and toughness.
So your winning culture is almost like a weapon at that point. Like that's how, like you're exuding a calm confidence of like, that's how good you are, that your opponent literally picks up on it and maybe makes mistakes or at least is like, I'll say this, even if it doesn't affect them that you're being positive, if you're negative, it does affect them.
Yeah.
Because if I'm like, you know, if I'm playing somebody and they just mega tilt out at something that just happened to them, my confidence level spikes because I'm like, this guy's going to start making dumb mistakes.
Or just that's confirmation that I just did something great.
Yeah.
If this guy's so pissed.
Yeah.
But that goes to the, it's a physical manifestation of what we just talked about, where they now believe they can't win the game or they have a lesser chance to win the game, and you see it
come
right out in them. So it's still true. You know, they're adopting that stuff that we just talked about in losing culture.
So, as far as, I guess, to broaden the topic briefly, like, into a meta idea, like, and I'm certainly not going to, like, point out, you know, like, trying to use, like, real examples necessarily, but what makes, like, a meta have a winning culture compared to, like, a losing culture?
I think...
is that a such thing?
Like, I absolutely believe that. I think there's a reason that, you know, good players keep coming from the same stores. Or, you know, you see these nucleuses of good players. Is it nucleuses? Nuclei?
Nuclei.
Yeah. Of good players in stores, you know, in, you know, other podcasts here. You know, RIW's got several good players. There's a reason that they kind of pack together. And it's not because, you know, Chuck traveled across the state to live near Jake. Or the guys in Texas, they all live by each other. You know, there's other War Machine players in Texas, in Iowa, and Detroit, and out in Connecticut that aren't part of those groups, but that they kind of, you know, birds of a feather flock together.
I guess to expound on to go back to the sports metaphor for a second, a lot of teams, you hear about this, like basketball, football, whatever, they'll bring in, you know, obviously, like, this team's got a losing culture. These players have a losing culture. They try to bring in like a super experienced coach that's won some championships, or they try to bring in veteran players who've got, you know, like, I've got three rings. And when they bring that guy in and he like first talks to the team, he's like wearing those three rings, right? Like, this is important. It's kind of like a symbol. Like,
yeah,
listen,
like, this
I'm
could
experienced
be you,
and,
buddy.
Right. And like my voice carries more weight than yours because I've been there. Right. Yeah. So maybe with players in the meta, it's the same thing. If you've got a guy, who's got that experience, that sort of championship experience, if you will, other players see it, becomes a role model, and then the culture sort of evolves, right?
Yeah, that's what it comes down to, is recognizing the role models in the group, and they need to be good guys. They need to know that they're role model and promote that winning culture.
Oh, yeah, 100%. And that's a tough one sometimes, because sometimes being skilled does not equate to being necessarily a good role model, or vice versa. Some guys are great role models, and then you're like, you're not that good of a player. Like, you've got all the right habits. You don't tilt out. You're a good guy. You run good lists, but you just aren't that good. But, when you hit that right person, it can really sort of evolve. And I've seen a lot of quality guys come out of, like, the sort of RIW camp, who are, you know, they're not necessarily Chuck Jake level, but they are, like, you know, B+ or, you know, whatever, however you want to grade players. You know, good players from just repeatedly playing those guys and picking up good habits and, you know, whatnot. So,
yeah, I agree.
Well, I'll say, I mean, you guys, you know, not to, you know, I don't want to give praise to you sons of bitches,
no, just,
you know, especially with the cup looming, but I'd say, you know, GG, you guys feel you have a really good community down there. I mean, from trying to kind of get more experience to my local group here in Flint. You know, this is an interesting topic for me just to listen to you guys, because we have a lot of new players. You know, our open game nights used to be like four or five guys, and now we're like 20 plus.
That's awesome. So awesome.
You know, week in and week out, but everybody's new. You know, everybody's new. Everybody's like kind of like switching factions and stuff like that. You know, everybody's just trying to figure out how they want to play this game. And I think it, you know, this show is going to probably post, after the cup and we'll see. But I feel like my guys at locally will kind of behind, not necessarily losing culture, cause I'm sure they're confident in their skills to play, but I think they're going to feel already semi behind the eight ball. Like, maybe, you know, they have to have like an upset. They're the underdogs in every game on this Saturday, I'm sure.
They're like, they're the Karate Kid, and we're like the Cobra Kai.
The Cobra Kai, yeah, that's exactly right. That is exactly right. That's the point I was trying to make.
Yeah.
So yeah, I don't know. So I kind of wanted to see what, you know, how you guys thought of what you guys do to kind of overcome that, because that's got to be you, Bill. I mean, you're the one that built it down there. So
well, that's not true. It's not like I had. You know, I was just one of many people. We all got together, and the store was opening, so there was no pre-existing culture to change. So when you get a clean slate, you can either start good or start bad. And I got lucky enough to have a bunch of other dudes around me, like Brian, who were like-minded and all cool dudes. Now, we've had some people in our meta that had, you know, some meltdown problems or super negative attitudes and stuff, and that stuff has sort of weeded itself out. But we've had moments where, you know, we've had to pull guys aside and be like, look, dude, what you're doing is not great for everybody around you. You know, Brian's had some dad chats with some guys.
So, I don't know why it always comes down to me to run these dad chats. I'm like the 5'6", 135-pound guy, and I'm always like reaching up to put my arm around someone's shoulder and be like, hey, man, let's be a team player here. That's not how we roll. That's not how we do things around here.
Here's the reason. It's because you've been around the block, and these guys, you know, they saw you already playing War Machine with some experience and some painted models. Maybe you taught them how to play. I think that's a big one. When you teach somebody how to play, you immediately become a role model for at least one person.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're just kind of, and I'm not a press ganger, but I think we're talking about the concept of what a good press ganger does, right? A good press ganger builds that kind of winning culture. Yeah. And I think, you know, even in a meta that's not like super serious business, right? You can kind of tell guys who have like the eye of the tiger and those who don't. Like for example, there's that new guy in our meta, very new guy. He's bought like three factions. He's super into this game. It's Joe, right?
Yeah, Joe.
Okay. So Joe comes up to me, like I'm playing a game, and I got like my super serious face on cause I'm playing Chromac versus like Krios 3. And I'm like, oh God, this is not my favorite matchup to play. And I'm doing all this crazy stuff to block Enliven on a jack and then teleport a Stalker and kill it. And I can't sprint far enough away to get out of the threat range of his stuff, and I'm going to lose that Stalker probably. So I basically traded a Stalker for like a Reckoner, I think. And, you know, some Menoth Jack that's not worth – or some Menoth Jack that's worth more than 8 points, but it's still 8 points.
No, that's losing culture talk.
Right, exactly. So Joe comes up to me, and after the turn is sort of resolved, like between turns, like he was very polite, didn't like bug us during, like they're in the middle of all this going down. He was like, so – he's like, do you think that was a good trade? And I just immediately was thinking to myself, like, this guy's been playing for like 3 weeks.
Yeah, bear in mind, I gave that guy his first BattleBox demo the week of Christmas.
Yeah, right. So this is like a month later maybe or something. He's asking me if it's like a good trade to like do all that work to basically trade a Stalker for a Reckoner. And I'm like, I don't know, man. I don't think it is necessarily, but I did it. Right?
He's like, hey, were you doing that on purpose?
Yeah. No, I mean, I think he felt like he's like, and I try to explain to him, I'm like, you know, sometimes when a jack is enlivened and you can get some stuff behind it, even if it's not a great trade, you sort of have to just take it because otherwise all game you're going to run up, poke this jack, and then it's going to back up and then you're going to die, right? So I was trying to be like, well, enlivened, blah, 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 but I don't know. But it was just an interesting conversation to have with somebody who, who's that new, right? And he immediately, I just got a vibe. I'm like, this guy wants to play competitively. Which obviously, I mean, that's kind of what we're talking about here. I mean, we're not talking about casual players. We're kind of talking about players who want to get better, how to get better. But mentally, he seemed to have the right attitude where he's doesn't seem to get too up or down when he's playing games, and he asks the right questions. And I was like, you know, this guy's got like, he's sort of an example of a new guy who has that winning culture, right?
Yep.
Right. Doesn't mean he's winning, but he's got it, the components in place for success.
Absolutely.
So, and again, you know, I don't know him super well. I haven't watched him play a ton of games, but just my briefs or interaction with him, I was like, oh, yeah, this guy gets it.
Yep.
That's a real good point, Brian, to say that he's might not necessarily be winning. You can have a nice winning attitude and lose all your damn games.
Exactly. Yeah, I was going to bring that up earlier when we were talking about winning and losing culture. It has almost nothing to do with whether you win or lose.
The actual outcome.
It's more the opportunity you give yourself to win or lose. Based on your behavior.
Yep. Right.
It's just giving yourself the most opportunities to win.
Yep.
You know, whether those opportunities come to fruition or not, it's a different story, but cool. Yeah, I don't know. I thought that, you know, that was like an interesting topic because it, I don't know, it came up at lunch like a couple months ago. We were brainstorming for topics when we were going to, you know, we decided we were going to do season two of Warmans and whatnot, and we wanted to get more into the mental aspect of the game, I think, but it's really difficult to talk about without kind of, I thought we did a pretty good job of this one for sure. Cause I think we kind of came up with sports metaphors and details and examples, you know, but, It's a tough topic to talk about, but I think it's really pertinent to almost anybody. I mean, I think most people who listen to a War Machine podcast are probably interested in, even if they're not interested in competitive War Machine, like going to cons and winning cons, they're probably interested in at least winning games locally. Like, they're trying to get better.
Yeah, if they're listening to a podcast, they care about winning.
Right. Yeah, that's fair to say, I think. So I think it applies to almost anybody.
We're basically getting away from the X's and O's and doing Phil Jackson shit is what we're looking to do here.
Yeah, it's the Zen hour, but I mean, it's...
I like that. The Zen hour with JLF.
Right.
Or JLF, depending on what day it is.
Right. But I mean, it's sort of a semi... I mean, you can't go search it on... You know, nobody's really chatting about it. You can't go search for it. You know, winning culture, mental aspect of War Machine, it doesn't exist. But it affects everyone. Everybody does it. Everybody knows what we're talking about. It's just kind of unsaid, though.
Yeah. It's hard to articulate. And then there are people who make a living, like, selling this idea. You know what I mean? Like the, what is it, Tony Roberts of the world kind of people? You know,
right. Tony Robbins.
Robbins. Okay. Yeah, yeah, that guy. And then there's, like, all kinds of sports books about it. You know, I think Phil Jackson probably has a book. Zen of basketball or something like that, where he kind of discusses it. It's just one of those things that people kind of grasp for. I'm not saying we're bringing anything new to the table over what Phil Jackson would say about this, but I guess ultimately when it comes to this game, like, holding yourself responsible and being accountable for, like, everything that happens on the table is probably, in my opinion, the number one part of, like, a winning culture. I mean, is that a safe bet to say that?
I would, yeah, it is.
And then I think the rest kind of comes with that.
Yeah, I've found, like, in the last couple weeks, the games that I've lost, I told myself after the game, like, even if I'm like, man, I can't believe that one roll went that way or whatever, I'm capping everything with that guy beat me by outplaying me.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even things that, like, maybe you don't even believe that in the bottom, but you tell yourself that until you do believe it because you need to. Yeah. If you don't believe it, you are probably wrong.
Well, and what's, you know, again, kind of talking about the ego, like, anybody who wants to win that bad has an ego, right? And yep. This is the way it works. So everybody goes through that cognitive dissonant period. I want to say it might have been, I think Chad on Muse on Minis, like, in their early episodes, might have said something about this where he's like, everybody goes through that, like, 15 minutes of cognitive dissonance where you just, like, tell yourself that it wasn't your fault. Mm-hmm, and then once you kind of calm down, then you go, okay, why was that my fault? Right.
Yep.
I think that's fine. I mean, I don't think it's okay to verbally spew it at your opponent. Yeah. Where you're like, you know, you lucky motherfucker. I didn't pull, you know, I made a mistake and, you know, that's why you won, or your dice were awesome and that's why you won. It's like, no, you won. Good job.
Yep.
Walk away. Think all your nasty thoughts for the next 10 minutes. Calm down. Evaluate.
You know, I think it's important to get into a habit of, you know, and you know, for fuck's sake, be genuine about it. Congratulate your opponent when they beat you.
Yeah.
And I think if you get in the habit of doing that, you'll find yourself slowing down on the other negative shit.
Yeah, I mean, shake the dude's hand, look him in the eye, say, good job, man, at the very least.
I think we've all at least...
You have to walk away.
Yeah.
You know, that's fine.
Yeah, if you're going to have a meltdown, walk away or whatever, but I think we've all played games where we wish we didn't win because of the reaction the other guy's having.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I don't ever want to make somebody feel that way.
Yeah, you know, I'm going to be honest, too. Like, I'm 100% guilty of everything negative we talked about today. Yep. Like, I know I said that earlier, but I just want to reiterate that. Like, I am not preaching because, you know, I'm perfect. And I don't think anybody here is, right?
No, absolutely not. Bill, especially from the early days, I'm sure Bill still
I see one of your dice in my basement.
I was going to say, you have probably if he were to, like, sweep up his basement right now where we used to play, there's got to be, like, half a dozen of my dice laying about that. You know, or bedded in, like, the concrete cinder blocks.
Jay, you get a free pass for that shit, man. I can remember a time where you rolled the same dive, and, like, six times in a row was a one. Yeah. And just whipped it across my basement.
Yeah.
I mean, it happens. So, yeah, no, I'm not standing on a pedestal at all. I mean, I still get, get pissed, but it's different. I'm more pissed, you know, with myself, obviously, yeah, now, as opposed to, you know, me being mad at the dice or Menoth or Fire or whatever, you know, early on.
Yeah,
now
I want to take, like, I want to take a moment to say, Jay, I think you might be the best loser to play against. And I don't mean like you're a loser. I mean, like, when you're losing, you are like the most jovial dude. And it's awesome. Like, I don't feel bad beating you. A point where you almost get to, you ever play an opponent where it's going so bad for them that you get on like their side of the table and you're like, come on, man, hit my guy.
That's, well, you know, I'm a fan of like the Rocky movies. Yeah, no, that's my strategy, is to get like the Russian crowd to cheer for me instead of their, you know, their hometown guy.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Yeah, no, that's good, part man. Of my.
But like there's that. Definitely been, like, if I'm beating somebody and they're getting pissy, then I'm just like, I want this game to be over. I'm going to try and end it right now.
Can I bury
I don't
right want to
be with
couch.
This guy at this table anymore. And then there's times where you're playing somebody and you're beating them and they're being like, Jay, they're having fun. They're like, yeah, all right, you crush another guy, whatever. And you sort of find yourself rooting for your opponent.
Yeah.
You did mention something in that that actually, in my opinion, is and it's unfortunately, I don't like saying this, makes me feel kind of guilty, but there is a losing culture idea in what you just said, which is that you sympathize with your opponent who's having a breakdown at the table,
yeah,
and then you try to end the game quicker or you alter your play. That's a good way to be like, eh, I'm going to go for this assassination. That's 80%.
Well, as I said it, I thought about the way that I said it, and I didn't really mean like, I'm going to do something stupid to make sure we're not at this table in 5 minutes.
Sure. Right. I'm just saying like, I'm not saying like that's what you meant per se, but I'm saying that that idea exists, and that's something that you have to just be even keeled and just kind of like, you see it in tennis all the time, right? Mm-hmm. A dude will like turn his ankle, right? Tennis and War Machine have incredible correlation to the mental game, in my opinion. They're very, very close. And I watch a ton, like, I'm a huge tennis fan, right? But you'll see a dude like turn his ankle, and then he kind of gets up and he's, you know, limping around a little bit, and he's serving. So he kind of just, you know, serves the ball, doesn't really run for the return shot, whatever. His opponent starts like kind of trying to do different shit. Some guys will be like, I'm going to make this guy run around and like, see and test this ankle and see how bad it is. Or other guys will be like, well, I'm going to just try to end points fast. But they may alter their play based on that. And a lot of times it ends up going against the guy who isn't injured, right?
Right.
Because they suddenly, either they take their foot off the gas or they like press the gas all over the floor. And the reality is just keep playing your game.
Yeah.
And just ignore what's happening on the other side of the net, or in this case, on the other side of the table. And it's easier said than done.
Beyond that 48-inch piece of wood.
Right.
Right.
Yeah, easier said than done is right. I mean, that's it's hard, you know.
Yeah. I mean, and, you know, with friendly games, sometimes it's a little different story. But at a table where it matters, if your opponent is just losing their shit, until they say, I concede, it's like it's not happening. Yep. That's how you have to treat it.
Right.
It's just whatever histrionics are occurring on the other side of the table don't exist until the guy literally just says, I quit. And then it's like, all right, well, you quit. Cool. I win. But don't ever take like a meltdown as like a declaration of quitting.
Right? Yeah, no, that's for sure. But, you know, some people are just wired to be good guys and they don't want to stomp on somebody while they're down.
I 100% agree. But I'm just saying there's a component of being a good guy and taking your foot off the gas that's not good to win. That's not good for
winning War Machine. I agree.
No, listen, you can be a totally nice guy and still crush a dude who's having a meltdown. It's no fun, and it might make you feel bad, but you can't. I don't think you can adjust. You can't adjust your play to like the other guy's emotions.
Yep.
Right.
Well, it's not fair for it to be expected. That's for damn sure.
Yeah, it's not fair either way. Yeah, 100%.
I can think there's been times where you and I have been playing games where one of us was like, you know, the double command check fail or whatever, and you know it's between me and you, and we've talked about it, you know, post game or even when it was happening, we've had like light switch flip, like I'm melting down right now or whatever. Yeah, right. I'm having a bad reaction to something negative that happened in the game, and I'm doing it with 15 other dudes in here that look up to me, and I need to not do it in front of them.
Yeah, you know, and again, we're all human beings. Like, the idea that no one's going to demonstrate emotion during a competition is just sort of not realistic.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you know, and to kind of expound on your point, I've had games where I've been like, I've taken my foot off the gas pedal against you because something crazy happened on your side of the table that was just like, and you know, you're having, you're not a meltdown, but I mean, you're clearly upset about it, right? Or it's like, it's a friendly, so we're kind of just like, well, do we continue? Or, and then we kind of continue, but it's sort of like an altered game state because one player is sort of either unconsciously or consciously letting the other guy back in the game a little bit.
Yep.
And I just think as a habit, it's a really bad habit to get into.
It is.
You end up doing it when it matters.
I'm sorry, I've degraded your game, bro.
No. I know for a fact you've let me back in games. I've been like, you know, something awful happens, like, oh, a storm ball just got blown up by like whatever, some dumb shit that shouldn't have done it. And then, you know, you start like, you know, oh, these solos just run into positions to die next turn. And I'm like, what are you doing? And it's either like you're letting me back in the game on purpose, or you're like, oh, I'm housing. Let me just kind of take my foot off the gas pedal as far as concentrating and make some marginal decisions that might let Brian back in the game. And either way, it's not acceptable, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I get it. I mean, that's pretty much every game against you, but...
Cool. Yep. It's me crying because my Stormwall died on turn two.
I'm just kidding, buddy.
I don't even play Signar anymore.
Those Gators were so nasty, that Stormwall, so many times.
Yeah, the amount of times I like was visibly shaken because like three, four, five Gators with Fury got to my fucking Stormwall and just were like, nope, it's dead.
Oh yeah.
Not before Rask shot Arcane Shield off though. Son of a bitch, Rask. I hate that guy.
Why?
Dude, he's broken.
He's just a friendly pink merman.
Do you hear my I like how your Rask is pink. Do you hear my losing culture that I'm spewing right now? I'm like, Rask is the worst. I can't beat him.
Privateer Press is such a-holes.
Yeah.
That's something else I wanted to cross a point when we were talking about winning culture. I think it's important to believe in Privateer Press. You know, maybe I'm just a poor cultist, but they've done a pretty damn good job balancing this game for the last... How long has this game been around? Like 10 years now?
Ten years.
10 years. The Butcher was the 10-year anniversary thing.
Yep.
I got to believe they have a plan with most of their releases. If there's not an answer for it, they will make one. And I think the Thane is a pretty damn good example of that, the Houseguard Thane.
Yeah.
I've never been upset, you know, when people freak out or you know, for good or bad, you know, there's something's overpowered or something sucks. I've always been happy with, you know, when Battle Engines came. Battle Engines are perfect. They are exactly what you'd want them to be. Take them, don't take them, whatever. They're plenty fine. Same goes for Colossals and Gargantuans. You know, everybody freaks out. Nope, use them, don't use them. It doesn't matter. The game is still, you know, money.
This is
with or without them.
This is coming from Jay, Champion of the Mountain King.
Yeah.
I am.
You're walking the walk of what you're talking, man. You play the Mountain King in tournaments all the time.
He's coming with me in Borka. He's my list number two. He's my armor cracker.
And he's an enigma wrapped in a riddle that everyone hates except you. Which is great.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, I don't get... I mean, I don't want to get on a Mountain King tangent right
here. Let's not.
Yeah. But...
It comes down to, if you look at the top levels of a game, if there is diversity, then basically just stop talking about the game not being balanced. Like any player who's like, it's like, dude, the game isn't broken, but you're hitting a matchup like a buddy of yours is crushing you with Epic Lilith over and over again. You have to evaluate. Yes, it is easier for him to line up Epic Lilith and just shoot you all game than it is for you to come up with a list that fights it and for you to beat it. But that's right. Okay. Like that, it shouldn't be, you know, there are easier solutions than others, but there are solutions, right? Yeah,
there's no problem that every faction doesn't have some kind of answer to.
Yeah.
Right.
To make it a fight.
Yeah.
And look, just from my comment earlier, like I said, I was out, you know, that was the final straw, like the fourth fantasy tournament in a row of demons, dark elves, and vampire counts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I literally, I kid you not, I mean, you know, let's see, over four tournaments, so 16 rounds of play, didn't play anything but those three. You know, that was like my final straw. And then
what were you playing, Jay?
I was playing High Elves.
Okay.
You just didn't have the trust.
Right, like, I didn't have the faith that would come back around. And, like, I remember going to Muzzy's and being like, you know, what is that? And it was a Mariner, and that was done with fantasy.
Yeah. Well, I mean,
a Mariner is what brought you into this game.
A Mariner. I have no super sexy story of like seeing some awesome shit. No, it was a Mariner on a shelf. I was like,
The Pirate Jacks are beautiful. Like the Pirate Jack sculpts are fucking awesome.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't
it's
know.
It's funny what that we're using though the Mariner in this discussion because the Mariner is like such a piece of shit, like rules wise.
Right.
What are you talking about? Two Mariners as good as a Stormwall? Fuck.
Yeah. No, it was as good as a Galleon.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, they're Galleon. Sorry. Holy fuck.
It was a robot with a boat cannon and an anchor or some shit like that with like a porthole face. I don't remember what exactly he's got, but
they are beautiful models. Yeah, they're fucking awesome. I wish they were better in the game.
Right.
Jay, I'm just bummed that you don't push rectangles around anymore by yourself.
No, well, that was some of it too. Yeah, that's a good story. Yeah, no, I made. All right, so, all right, fantasy tangent. At the very end, I was using a wood elf army. I had like a high elf and a wood elf army. And the wood elves shoot a bunch of arrows, whatever, right? So the rules were only the front rank shoot. So I had like super long, like narrow rectangular trays. And, you know, like 10 guys wide long. Just one guy, one row of 10. And then like the next edition, I was like, guess what? Second rank can shoot. So it made my trays like irrelevant. It made them stupid. You'd want to make them like two rows of five.
Yeah.
So they don't have such a foot. That was like my final, like out. I'm done. I had like, well, Bill knows I had like trees on my trays and stuff. Yeah. I was like in a tree phase.
Yeah.
Right before you fucking made all that Minoth with the trees on the base.
That was the last army I painted. It was like my wood elves with like pine trees in it. And then Bill's like, hey, I want some men. Or no. I eventually gave that to you. But no, yeah, I was like, I don't know. Menoth is cool. They're white and red. Let me take them. I'm going to put them in snow. Let's use some snow trees. And I drilled holes in all the bases and put like snow trees in them and shit, which Bill later, you know, cut off.
I do like how at the breaking point for you was the rectangles. You were like, don't tread on me, Games Workshop. My rectangles are this shape, motherfuckers. Not that shape. I'm out.
Yep, I'm out. I'm done. What is that? Oh, a Mariner, Phineas Shea, you have pirates, whatever, I'm in.
Are there rectangles in this game? No, I'm in.
Beautiful.
Are there rectangles? No. Are there pirate-themed robots? Right. In.
All right, so these guys talked about the Michigan Cup. It's going to be the next, you know, it's this Saturday, big event. Everybody will be there.
The premier Michigan War Machine Tournament.
Premier event, yeah. That was the terms I was trying to think of.
Yeah.
So I was just going to, you know, last time I played Signar, and I played Signar for a couple of years anyway, exclusively. And this time around, after the last Michigan Cup, I just kind of took a cognitive, like, exhale and decided to try something new. And I went with Trolls. So I'm going to roll Trolls to this one. And I've played Trolls in, like, smaller events to this point, but not – I think I did play 150-point tournament with Trolls, but
they've always been a moonlight for you, basically.
Yeah, it's always been on the side and not to this caliber. I mean, everybody's gonna, I mean, Chuck, and you know, to give you an idea in listener land, JVM and Chuck are one team, you know, with Hickok, who's another, you know, really good PG. So I mean, there's gonna be a lot of high caliber players there and everything. So yet trying to prepare for it, you know, new faction and everything. I've been trying, and this kind of goes into practicing with a purpose. I've been not making drastic changes to lists and things like that. I've just been playing what I felt comfortable in, and I know Bill's going to get on my case, but what I've decided to run is Borka and P. Mandrak. Those are my – hold on.
Don't say it.
P-Mandrak.
Don't do it.
Preemptive.
Those are my most comfortable casters. One, because they're hard to kill. So, you know, learning a new faction, they give me some cushion that way. But then just from you know, an armor standpoint, a holding standpoint. I've tried to test out the scenarios to make sure I don't beat myself on scenario right out of the gate. I've decided to go double warders, double fell callers in both lists. So I don't, you know, with list chicken or anything, I don't screw myself up.
Yeah. So like you've sort of kind of a throwback to the stuff that we've talked about the last episode where we talked about our sort of list chicken, kind of how to play list chicken with, and our philosophies. Your philosophy is two lists that are very similar. So you really can't make a huge error.
I can't screw myself up. Yep.
Right. Your only like error could be neither of your two lists cover something, basically.
Yep. Yeah. Yep. And that's just going to be, an uphill grind for me. Like even of the scenarios, I it's going to be a 6-round tournament. We're using the master scenario. I know incursion is going to be rough on me. Yeah. That's just going to be a hard round period. Doesn't even matter who the opponent is. That's just going to be a hard round period.
Dude, I'm hoping for the Masters for Incursion if I play you, man.
Right? No, I know.
I don't want to deal with double warders ever. Losing culture.
Fuck,
I can't beat them.
So I know that's like on the troll forums, you know, people run them with Epic Gristle and stuff, but I haven't played her. I haven't got around to anybody. I've only played like 3 casters. Or warlocks to this point, but yeah, no, I just feel super comfortable. And for me, my philosophy is it's better for me to play, even though I know I own a lot of models. It's just better for me to play what I know I can use comfortably and quickly and efficiently than, you know, trying to stare at the cards and forgetting rules and things like that. It's just very simple for me to do this, and I think it is going to be we'll see. We can do a post cup wrap up if I'm just like fuck double warders, but for right now, I think it's
I'll say that fucking post cup.
You'll say it pre cup,
right? But it's just I know you guys talked about what you were bringing. That's what I'm going to bring, and that's in the crown jewel of it all. Like I said, with all the competition that I'll be there. I'm taking, the Mountain King. The Mountain King is going with Borka because I love them together. I know everybody finds that silly, but basically my philosophy is, so don't use this against me, you bastards, if we have to play. But, like, I don't know. I just put Felcall, the warders, to go to mat 9 and then cast Mosh Pit and knock a bunch of shit down so that the Mountain King auto hits. It's not... It's not tough, if I have to, I'll rage the Mountain King and then the stone, take him to 23 auto-hitting.
Fuck.
Yeah, that seems all right.
It's not hard to do with the warders having reach and stuff, and of course the Mountain King having reach. It's not like, I've been testing it. It's not like this impossible, one in a million way of like getting the bases to fit right. It's not too hard.
Yeah. No, the warders allow a lot of... Like they're sort of the opposite of champs in that regard. Like champs jam up your army a lot. Warders can really spread out and leave some lanes, which is really cool. I think that's one of the advantages of that unit over champs and obviously the armor 21 and weapon master and all that. That's good too. But I like the ability to spread out is really, really nice for them.
And it helps me, coming from Signar to where I never really bricked up a lot. So I don't know. I'm not the best at bricking. Like my Janissa walls are sometimes still like all fucked up. They're just not where they should be because I'm not good at that yet. Getting better, but not out of the gate all that great at it still. But they just give me a little bit of play. I like to be able to spread out. Right?
Admitting your faults.
Mm-hmm. There you go.
Well, as long as you're practicing it.
So even though my list happened to be like very similar, it's just Borka, the Mountain King, and a Mauler, in one list, and then the other battle group is Madrak. He has Moses and Janissa, but then I have 2 Axers and Rock, so Primal Axers and Carnage, stuff like that. It's kind of my I basically have an armor list and an infantry list. because
so that's the split you wanted to run is armor and infantry.
Yeah, that's pretty much how I broke it down.
I don't hate it.
No. Well, and yeah, Mat 11 because Mat 7 base and then Fellcaller and then Carnage.
Carnage.
Right?
Yep.
Yeah. Pretty good.
It can take the Axers to 10 and the Warders to 11. Yeah.
That's cool, man. Well, and you know, ironically enough, what you've done, which is basically kind of write two lists that are, you know, have a lot of overlap. I did the same thing with my lists. I mean, I'm playing Circle and I'm relatively new to them. So I'm at that point where I'm in the same sort of boat where I haven't played with everything in the faction and I don't want to write two lists where I literally have 100 points of models on my tray. You know, right. I've got like 60 or 70 points of models on my tray because of how much overlap there is. And that means like when you're practicing list A, you're kind of practicing list B in a lot of ways. And I think that's an efficient way to learn stuff quick for an event like this, where, you know, you're playing a new faction that you can't bite off all of it at once.
Yeah. Right. And they're pretty straightforward casters too. I mean, I don't know, like P. Grissel and Doomy's not too bad, but the Gristles for sure, Grimms for sure. They just have like a lot going on. Like
they do. Yeah.
You know, there's just a lot to keep track of and look at. I'm just, I don't know. Hopefully it'll work out to be a pretty decent day result wise, but it's just super simple. They're just super simple lists that I'm hoping will be effective. And you know, I know that it'll be really dependent upon my positioning because I know obviously I don't, you know, Epic Kruger is not a friend of mine. Any speed debuffs are not a friend of mine.
No, yeah.
Things like that. I have issues. I got issues, I know, but hopefully we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you know, I think the main thing is not only do you pick two lists that you're familiar with and two casters you're familiar with, you pick two casters that are very, very durable casters. So right. Some of a lot of the mistakes players make that end games really quick with new factions are just misplacing caster models and getting them killed. I don't see, other than maybe just accidentally giving away the Mountain King somehow, I don't really see a way that in either of those lists you're just gonna like, oops, I made a mistake, I lose. Like that those lists are probably pretty resistant to accidentally giving some charges up and things like that, right?
Yeah, and I, like I said, you know, my worry, because if we're going toe-to-toe in the middle of the table, then I'm winning. Then my game plan is apparently working at that point.
Yeah.
And I have no issues. It's, you know, I don't want to get beat quick on scenario, you know, is what terrifies me more than anything, because, yeah, the casters are stout. So, I mean, I've been kind of measuring things out and looking to where I have to be, like going first, going second, you know, run, you know, between running and stuff like that, how much can I fill up a zone? Like the other day, like balance of power, which is going to be pretty fun. I don't know, that far flag is, to contest like your opponent's flag seems damn near impossible for me in this list.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to have trouble with it.
Yeah. But as far as getting into the zone, I went first turn two, I think I got four in, but I should be able to, you know, depending on the terrain and stuff, put two to four, maybe warders in that zone, toe into that zone. And that's not the easiest thing to remove. No. So I shouldn't go down too quickly.
Yeah. I mean, the lists are slow enough that you're going to have to probably do stuff like, well, if I don't contest the scenario, I lose. So I just have to run my whole army into it. Yep. But those lists are they take a hit so well that you probably can sustain that kind of like, just have the alpha and still come out ahead at the end because of just how durable those models are.
That's actually how that played out, was that I knew it was that way. So I towed in like two or three warders and then set everybody else ready for the counter charge. And that's what happened. Beast 09 came in and couldn't quite finish all of them. And then died in the counter charge.
Yeah, right. And Beast 09 for a unit of warders is not good.
Right, that's a terrible matchup. Like, of all the things, there's only like a couple things on the table that I was even worried about. One of them was Beast 09, and they took it to the face.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, unless that guy's playing like Karchev or something, or he's got a ton of, or, you know, Epic Sorcha or something where there's like a ton of heavy hitters that, that can really blow up most of your list.
Right.
If they, if they're trading you, you know, the 20 points of their list that can really crack armor.
Right.
On a bad trade, like here's this 11 point jack for 8 points of warders, like, God, you're going to, I mean, that's just, that's really good for you.
Yep.
Your whole list hits hard, right? I mean, really outside of like a Creelstone Bearers who aren't shabby, but the rest of your list hits like a fucking truck.
It's all Fearless and Weapon Masters for you. Basically the units, solos. And then it's none of the, I don't have like an Impaler or anything. It's all Mountain King, Mauler, Rock, Axers.
Yeah. I think we joke around about it before, but the whole like vanguarding your list with Borka thing is like a perfectly viable strategy. And I was thinking about it because I made the joke like, oh, you're going to screen your Mountain King with Borka, right? And I was just like, oh, that's funny. And then I was thinking about it. I'm like, that probably is going to happen at some point in a tournament game where Jay's going to be like, oh, my Mountain King's only got 10 HP left. Let me just stick Borka in front of him. You got any additional sort of commentary on maybe matchups, Jay? Like things you don't want to see or like the fact that it's divide and conquer one and it's a 6-round tournament. Like, do you have a list that you're probably going to play more than the other or something, you know, anything like that,
right.
You know, and again, you know, I'm not pumping you for information here, you know, whatever you want to say, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I'm just kind of, I mean, I'm looking at it right now that Borka is sort of my armor cracker just because I have rage in that and the Mountain King. That's, you know, and then infantry spam is definitely the other list because, through trial and error, you know, at first I'd never had an Axer, then I added one Axer, then I thought, oh, two Axers would be amazing, and then I added two Axers, and I was like, two primal Axers is fucking nuts, and then did that, and then, you know, then there's like a 10-inch circle of nothingness in the middle of the board.
Yeah, primal Axers under Crusher, that is...
It's some sick shit.
Yeah. Like,
it kills a lot of dudes.
Yeah, Matt 10 Axers is pretty alright.
Yep.
That idea has been that, like, the Rock plus a bunch of lights or, you know, a couple lights has been kicked around a lot on the forums. I don't know if people really actually have used it. I've never really, like, seen it in a tournament. I don't know if I've ever even seen Rock. I think I've seen Rock on a table, like, once or twice.
Right.
But I really like that idea. I think that's really good.
So, yeah, I'm going to give it a go because, you know, the Ruins of War or an Epic Doom Shaper and things like that. Epic Madrak, those are, you know, kind of the hot list right now. So I'm definitely going to be different, and not because I'm a genius or creative, but because I'm just comfortable with this list. I can just point and click my way through it in 10 minutes, super easy.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, like, I don't know whether you intended it this way or not, but the last Michigan Cup event had an crazy, crazy overabundance of Signar. Like there was like what, like 11 Signar players or 30?
There was a lot.
There was like, I think there was at least 10. It was a fucking ton.
Right.
And you built two lists that pretty much like outside of maybe Epic Haley, like winning, beating you on scenario, Signar has such a difficult time with the double warder. Just trying to chew through all those high armor HP is really, really hard. So I think you've meted the field from last year pretty well. You know, we'll see what the field's like this year. Obviously, it could be totally different. But I think that was kind of interesting.
Yeah, I think a lot of people might have thought the same thing. Like, well, I mean, well, it's going to be down to Signar players, you and I, for sure.
Right.
So I don't know. I think a lot of people saw that and were like, "Whoa, that's kind of weird." And I think maybe a lot of people have corrected it. And
yeah,
I don't know. At Flint right now, trolls are hot. Everybody's starting trolls for whatever reason.
Ugh. Shit, man. Oh, let me just dust off Gareth. Fuck.
Yeah.
Gareth. Why don't you just dust off your epic lich?
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So,
yeah, obviously speed buffs suck. I don't want to lose on scenario, so like the Haleys and things is no good. You know, as far as like Bills, TKs, and other TKs go, I don't know. I think I have a kind of a game plan for positioning the models that will help lessen that impact some, but
what would that game plan be, Jay?
Yeah, no, it's all right.
Let me just get my notepad out.
Right.
Well, I mean, just you've got you know, Janissa Wall and you have a Mountain King. So
right.
Those are two immovable things that you can just sort of jam models around to make it hard.
Yep, use as a backstop. I mean,
yeah, it's yeah. Genius. Same thing with Epic Kruger feats. You got two backstops. Like, well, you have a backstop in each list.
Yep.
So, I mean, I'm not saying it's not going to suck, but you can minimize the suck a little bit with that.
A little less. But, yeah, I mean, yeah, and, I don't know, magic stuff, you know, it's not going to be any good. You know, my defense is, other than Borka, you know, with Iron Flesh is a thing, but...
yeah.
Well, actually, you know what? I take that back, especially, like, the last 2 weeks. I'm downplaying Surefoot. I put Surefoot forward. I usually put it on Rock and then play Rock forward. Mm-hmm. The number of times that, like, Surefoot comes into play within 3 inches of Rock is a lot. I mean, yeah. it's like a mini, like, the not nice uncle of Iron Flesh. It's like, it's not exactly the same, but it kind of comes into play a lot.
Not Surefoot. Nice uncle.
Yeah. I think
Surefoot. They used to touch Iron Flesh in the fucking closet at Christmas.
That's what Surefoot
easy,
is.
Easy. Now, yep. The, I will say this about Surefoot. I think if I was just like building a faction from, or a caster from fresh, I think I'd rather have Surefoot than Iron Flesh. Surefoot is a fucking banana spell. That spell is so good.
Right. And from my experience, I don't know, you know, a lot of people will put Iron Flesh on Borka because he becomes unkillable, and a lot of people will put Surefoot on Madrak and add the wall, and now he's unkillable, you know, quote unquote. But I put him on four. It's going to be on the Warders, and it's going to be on Rock, who's going to be in the thick of it. And I put it forward and not back until, like, you know, impending doom is coming. Then I'll put it on the caster.
Until you take Borka and use him to screen your Mountain King.
Yep, and at that point in time when I need to take a couple Stormwall shots to the face or whatever, then I'll put Iron Flesh on him and put him out front.
Yeah, God, I don't even know if you bother shooting Borka with a Stormwall.
Nah.
Ugh, dude. You're like, oh, cool, I did 2 points of damage.
It was.
I spent two focus to double boost a shot and did 2 points of damage, and then the second shot unboosted did no points of damage.
Right.
Awesome. Like,
well, yeah. So like, kind of like side notes are you know, I've always had trouble with crits. I mean, I know, you know, shocking, a lot of people do, but they've always been a nuisance of mine. Or, you know, if we're going to expound, I have a losing mental culture about crits.
I like how that's become like a meme.
Right. Yeah. And I'm starting to overcome it some, but the kind of one of the things that caught my attention was like, so like Biothralls, I never get all of them. I always let one bastard sneak through or whatever. And I don't really have any, I mean, I have some sprays in both lists, but I don't have a lot of shooting, obviously. And the Warders took a full like Biothrall purge to the face, and I don't know, I had like 3 wounds.
Yeah, so that, I mean, that's like
when you know, when I'm coming from Signar and like one Biothrall like explodes half my army, to like the whole unit kinda doing 40% damage on one guy spread out over a couple guys, I'm like, holy fuck. You know, that was like my first my first, you know, Warders are pretty legit. And then, like, the next week, playing the same guy with Epic Lich, he was, like, hemming and hawing about the feet a little bit. And we played it out, and I said that I didn't think it mattered. And he kind of, you know, we were just, like, joking around. And I said, I don't think it mattered as far as killing Borka. And he took it as a challenge. And we just did, like, a sidebar, took a full, like, 8-bay knight lich charge, what lich's feet charge the face, and then they did 6 damage.
Yeah. You pretty much, for that to work, it's like lich needs to land a parasite.
Right.
It needs to be a bane or a Tartarus to apply dark shroud. And you need curse also to get the mat up high enough to like have a chance to hit him. Especially if he's Iron Flesh. I mean, fuck. If he's Iron Flesh and they don't have a buff, they're just all going to whiff on him.
That's what it was. And I said, I didn't think his feet could do it. And he was like, I accept your challenge. And I said, swing away. And he did like 6 damage.
And you need like a blood hag hanging out there to deny the tough check too. So, I mean, I think, you know, if your lists have a weakness besides scenario casters, it's going to be like just Crick's Weapon Master type spam.
Right.
But I don't, it's so, Armor 21 is kind of bonkers. The stuff in Crix that will out-threat your whole list, which is significant. I mean, Bane Knights and Satixis right. and stuff, they're really going to have a hard time chewing through that. I'm not saying it's not possible. I mean, you look at some of like the, you know, like the P. Denny's of the world where they can like really easily apply
yep.
at least a -3, but probably a -5, maybe even a -7 armor. Now right. your dudes are just dying. But, you know, a lot of Crix lists actually might struggle to chew through that much armor. I'm not saying it's like great,
right.
but you may have some gain. And that I know from back when I played Crix, that Madrak Crusher feet turn is just like, oh, one reach heavy, or, you know, usually yep. Mulg, obviously, or only Mulg, I should say, since I said heavy, or, you know, an Axer or whatever, just murdered like half my army.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, I've seen Mulg just be like, oh, I just killed 14 infantry models in a Crix list. And it's like, holy fucking shit.
Yeah.
It is surprising, and you may catch a person who's not as familiar with P. Madrak and that right. style of P. Madrak list, even though maybe an experienced Crix player might sort of just jam his shit into your face, and right. then you're like, cool, world explodes, right?
Yeah, and one thing, you know, and I'm sure troll players are well aware of it, but it's like, you know, it's new to me, so it makes me smile or whatever, but... because Janice is in that, instead of dropping the wall every time, especially if I have the scroll intact, and I, you know, I can transfer a couple or whatever, I feel okay. I was using Tectonic Shift to clump bastards up.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then feet.
Yeah.
And that was working out really well when I was concerned, even with the amount of reach that I have, about the spacing of everything. I'd just clump them up that way.
Right on.
Yeah, I feel like your list sort of the Madrak, the Chad and John Damaris, like, Ultra Brick list was popular there for a while. I mean, I know Dreyer was playing in our meta. Your list sort of trades a little bit of speed yep. for a better wide scenario presence than that list has. Like, that list is awful on Incursion. Even right. new Incursion, it's pretty bad in. And it's really bad on, is it Outflank, the double circle?
The two circles, yep.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So your list is actually at least has a chance in those scenarios where that Ultra Brick is, I mean, there's just nothing to it other than this like clump of models that's like 9 inches wide, right?
And it seemed, I know it's a really good list because I've played against it, but it just seems, I don't know, like so much overkill to me to have like three heavies being... Well, I'm armor 22 and defense 18. Well, you could have just have been defense 18. You know, the armor doesn't even matter, or, you know, or you could have been defense 10 for all that matters with that much armor. It just seemed like so much overkill when I played against it that I just toned it down.
Yeah, I think it's like the perfect list for hardcore, where you just right, know the right. scenario is going to be narrowed down the middle. It right. just, it concentrates so much force and so much defensive power in like a small space that
right.
it's very difficult to beat that list in that kind of scenario. But, you know, in an SR, especially an SR that you could get locked into a list at some point or something, it becomes, I think, it's it, you know, that takes some of the sting out of that list. And I think that's why you don't see it as much as some of the other, you know, even like Runes of War, there's that component of like a shitload of the wizard hand guys, whatever the hell they're called, Runeshapers.
Wizard hand guys? Yeah.
Awesome. They're wizards and they have giant hands.
Nice.
So anyway,
I think that's another cool. list that's popular that I think, you know, as far as a troll on troll action, I don't hate my chances in, actually.
No, I wouldn't hate your chances anyway. Winning culture.
Right. Yep.
You have a caster that can knock down like the entire world, which is pretty good against the beasts in that list.
Right.
Which is really where, you know, with your two lists, that's what you have to concentrate on. The Runeshapers are going to be annoying, but
right,
not critical to remove them as much as it is critical to get rid of, say, you know, Mulg.
Right.
Mulg's got to die, right?
Yeah.
Because Mulg's like, hey, look, I killed 5 warders in a turn. You know,
right.
No big deal. Like, I'm POW 23, so...
Let's not get carried away.
I'm not getting carried away.
He might kill 3. Maybe he could do it. Maybe
every warder in his melee range is dead.
Oh,
yeah.
You're forgetting about Tough Danielson.
Oh, am I? Because he gets like
oh,
seven.
He's, well, he can Yeah, no.
He gets like 7 fucking club attacks at POW up to 23, depending on the
that,
list.
That doesn't matter. He can tough like 20 times in a row. Fuck.
Oh, right. We're doing that. Okay. Gotcha.
I don't know. I don't
we're doing that losing dumb culture. Argument thing. Yeah. No, they're arm 21. He's POW 23. That's 9 damage each on average. That's just, hey, tough. You know, seems all right.
I guess.
But, so that's what I'm taking. Hopefully it works. Especially just like this last practice week, I don't know. I felt like I used the Stonewall for a while there. I didn't have like the UA attachment to the,
on the stone.
So
okay,
yeah. So like,
man, that thing solves a lot of problems. It's worth it.
Yeah, no, it's huge. I don't know. You know, I'll never not take it again. But like when I was learning them, I didn't have it, and so like the stone was always like the last thing I activated. And now
it's like it's got to be the first.
It's like the first, or like right up there towards the first, you know, things I do. And this last week, I kind of just everything just sort of gelled, just putting the wall in the right place, moving the stone properly, not letting the stone get killed.
You're
everything
at the right time.
Yep, everything was just kind of clicking. Yeah, excuse
is
me.
That not, last week. Is that not the best feeling?
Yeah,
it was.
Like, I think ultimately, when I the reason why. For me, like War Machine is by far my favorite miniatures game and by far my favorite game, period. Like I said, I'm a huge tennis fan, right? War Machine and tennis have like the same thing in this regard as well, is that they're both incredibly deep and incredibly difficult to learn and master, right? Nobody learns how to play tennis in a year, like well. Like, yeah, right. I hit the ball back and forth. That's cool. But to be a like competent club tennis player takes you like 5 years, you know, plus to be, right. For it to look like tennis that you would see on television, like right. Actual tennis, right? Like real serving and volleying and you know, rallies. And War Machine's the exact same way. And the joy of like the discovery and the learning and like getting things to work the way you want them to work, when it finally clicks, it is like the fucking best thing.
Yeah, it was.
It is the best. I don't know how to describe it other than that. It is. It makes all the you know, looking at Worm at work when I should be working, making this podcast, painting models, all that non-playing time. When you play and all that thinking and all that metagaming and whatnot comes together and you actually get it right on the table. It's just fucking. You know,
it's great.
The best things in life are earned, and you've earned it at that point, right? It feels so good.
Yep.
Yeah, I agree.
Nope, I know it. I was a happy kid enough to where I was actually playing one of the guys on the other Gamer Sanctuary team, and you know we played it with the intention of kind of being our final dress rehearsal before the tournament.
Yeah,
and I looked at him, I was like, "Yep, I feel good." And he was, you know, and I think he did too on what he was playing. He was going to switch up a few little things, but. You know, we both kind of finished our game going a lot more confident than when we started.
That's good.
Yeah,
that's a good feeling to have. I wish I had that. Right.
Well, you know, at the last cup, I think I was hemming and hawing about what I was going to do, like up till like on my way driving to the store. Like,
yeah. I was just freaking out.
Yeah, I was just freaking out about what to do, and this time, you know, I kind of settled on this list a couple weeks ago, and through a few, I don't know, half a dozen games, I've just kind of made it feel right enough to play at the tournament, I guess.
Good.
Good, man.
We'll see.
So you guys ready to roll into some recommendations here?
Yeah, let's do it.
Cool. So, you know, we've shamelessly stolen this bit from Crippled System. Just talking about things we recommend. We kind of skipped it on the last episode just because we kind of forgot we were on a roll with our other topics. But this is just sort of non-War Machine related, recommendations for whatever. So you guys have anything you'd like to recommend?
I will recommend, as far as movies go, I am comfortable enough with who I am to recommend The Hunger Games.
Wow. Bold moves, Jay.
I fucking love The Hunger Games. I don't know. Katniss Everdeen, I love. So anyway, yeah. I read Catching Fire a while back. I haven't read the last one because I was waiting to watch the movie. And my wife ditched me in deep South Indiana to go watch Catching Fire over Thanksgiving. Where I had, because it's my fault, I was playing against Legion, and I couldn't be bothered at the time.
You were too busy purchasing Hello Kitty backpacks?
Yeah, pretty much. I mean, it was on my phone, but,
no, because he's a 13-year-old girl, because he likes
the Hunger Games. Oh, because he likes the Hunger Games, gotcha. Yes. Is that for 13-year-old girls? I didn't realize that.
No, not really. I'm just busting his chops. I mean,
it's in that category.
It's like teen lit.
So is this like him like recommending Twilight or something? I'm not really familiar with
No. Games.
It's better than that because there is a love story. There has to be. It is for teen people. But, you know, I don't think anybody really dies in Twilight. I don't know for sure, but I don't really think so.
Spoiler alert.
Well, I don't think anybody dies. It's not saying, no, a spoiler would be like somebody A did definitely die. But I don't know. Everybody dies in the Hunger Games. It's dope shit. I love that movie. I don't care.
Nope. And Jay, I'm not going to make fun of you for liking the Hunger Games because that's fine. I mean, I like a lot of things that are, you know, not probably 35-year-old adult things. Yeah, I will say my opinion on the Hunger Games. I actually, the idea of the Hunger Games is sort of like Running Man-esque sci-fi kind of plot where like it sounds fine to me. I watched the first movie and it hit that scene where they're like, all right, kids, murder each other. And I was like, nope. And I could not fucking watch it. And it's weird because I'm not really like a squeamish dude, but any cinema that shows like real kids, you know, a lot of movies are like, oh, this dude's in high school and the actor's like 27 and you're like, fuck off.
Right.
And that dude gets stabbed. I'm like, fuck that guy. But like real kids stabbing each other always I don't know. It doesn't land with me. I can't do it.
So does like Lord of the Flies make you uncomfortable? Flies.
Yeah. Super. Like any of that shit. I can't watch it.
Lord of the Flies fucked me up, man.
Brian gets squeamy when Piggy gets hit in the face with a boulder.
Yeah. That movie fucked me up, man.
I can't watch it. I can't read it. I'm not sure why. I'm not trying to get on like a high horse about it either. I'm just like,
sure.
I tried because my fiance likes it. The Hunger Games, that is. And I just was like, oh, fuck, I can't watch this part. And then I just kind of drifted off, and then that was the end of me actually watching it. Because I assume the rest of the movie is about kids shooting each other with bows and arrows and shit. And I was just like, yeah.
Yeah, it's like the Predator, except they're like 12.
Yeah. I mean, that's a better description. Maybe, I don't know, maybe I'll revisit it, but. Yeah, I had a super negative reaction to it for whatever reason. I'm just a fucking weirdo. But
no, that's pretty awesome. Maybe I need to watch it.
It's good. I don't know. That's like, I don't know. I'm a big fan of all the Harry Potters as well. And I guess I don't know if that's really like 33-year-old men type stories, but I dig them. But so for this week, I'm recommending Catching Fire or the Hunger Games series in general.
Cool, man.
We got to wrap this podcast up so I can. Read the third book now.
Nice.
Jay's like got the fucking dog-eared copy open, and as we're talking, he's just like reading. He's like not even listening to us.
He's got his old man Jay glasses on the end of his nose.
Yep.
Do you have on the end of your glasses? Do you have those that little strap, like the old lady strap that you know you wear on your neck?
Bedazzled neck strap, so you don't lose your.
It's a Hello Kitty print.
Oh, pardon
me. I didn't
know
this Skype was video. Oh,
Jay, have you been just like jerking off during this whole process?
Right, I didn't know you guys were busting
shit.
Yeah.
Well, I'm on an audio call. I don't know about you guys.
That's the funniest thing you've ever said, Jay.
Yeah.
Jay's he said like, that so fucking, he was a perfect straight man on that.
Yeah. He's just reaching for the little square of black electrical tape to put over your iPad. You're like, oh,
yeah, like those crazy people at work.
Yeah.
Right. I love when I go to sit at somebody's desk and work on their computer and they have a fucking piece of paper taped over the webcam, like we're spying on them or something. Get over yourself.
Right. Yeah, I don't blame them for that, but it is kind of funny. Like I don't, you know, if I knew less about computers and I was part of like some organization, I'd probably be like, wonder if they can turn that on. So I assume it's mostly just women who don't want to be like, oh, I'm working from home in my bra and panties and I don't want creepy IT dudes looking at me. Not like they're gonna like bust you for looking at Facebook all day instead of working, but more like, you know, they just don't want a camera turning on while they're at home or something. I don't know.
I feel like you said that with truth behind it.
What do you mean?
Like that was a real example you just gave.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't wear a bra or panties, but I don't really want my camera turning on when I'm working from home.
Fair enough.
There'll be sights that should not be seen.
Yeah? All right, you got a recommendation, Bray?
So, actually, this is another media recommendation to kind of piggyback on Jay's thing. Is I used to be, like, super into comics when I was young. You know, like, you know, 12 years old, 13 years old. And then I kind of got into Warhammer, and that broke the comic. That, like, the comic book hobby and the Warhammer hobby could not coexist because they're both expensive as shit. And, you know, I got super into miniatures, and that was that. That was that. Like, I never really looked at comics again. And obviously there's been this big revival recently of, like, you know, superhero movies and shit, you know, and some of it I'm like, oh, that's kind of cool, you know, but I'm not really into superhero stuff, those sort of tropes anymore. Okay. I occasionally watch the movies, but not really. But recently I was just like, I'm super bored with books. And I hate nonfiction, and I don't say I hate, but I'm not having a lot of luck finding fiction that I really enjoy, and just sort of was in a rut. You know, people kind of do that with music too, or movies. They're like, oh, let me try something just totally different. So I like just started picking up some comics again, and not superhero shit, but I found a comic called Saga. I don't know if you guys have heard of it, but it's, it's a comic. I mean, I buy the volumes, the graphic novel ones. They're like $10 or $15 each. And I'm not through it yet.
And so that's like one of those ones that are super thick. They're like 50 comic books thick.
Yeah, basically okay. The way they publish them is like every 10 comics that come out, they then, you know, in just thin paper form, they then release a graphic novel version of those 10 compiled, gotcha. Which are more like book, you know, nice bound and whatnot.
Gotcha.
But Saga is this story that I don't even know how to fucking, it's crazy. Basically, it's like in, you know, whatever, 1979, when people saw Star Wars for the first time, it kind of blew their fucking mind with like the inventiveness of the world and just how kind of crazy it was. Saga sort of piggybacks onto that same kind of premise. It is just a crazy universe that this story happens in. And I don't want to spoil much of it, but the art is incredible. The story so far is amazing. I'm only like a couple volumes in, so anybody who listens, you know, don't fucking spoil it for me on Twitter or something. But it is killer storytelling. And it's rocking my world. And I'm like not the kind of person to be like, oh, comics are fucking killing me. But it is really good. I'm sure you can check out samples of it on like your Kindle or your iPad with the Kindle app. There's ways to kind of look at that stuff. I mean, if either you guys are interested, I can let you borrow them. But I was in this sort of fiction rut where I'm just like, books, fantasy books, sci-fi books, whatever. Just none of it was really, you know, doing it for me.
Right.
And man, this shit is good.
Nice.
It is really good, yeah.
It's good to know, man.
Yeah, it's kind of tickling the art itch a little bit, too. Like, the art is really good and really inventive. And, it's kind of one of those things where I think I accidentally stumbled. It's kind of like someone would be like, I don't really like movies. And then they, like, stumble on, like, Citizen Kane as, like, the first movie they've watched in 10 years. Or something like that where it's like, oh, you know, I don't really love movies that much. And I just watched, No Country for Old Men or, you know, something, like, really arty and, like, kind of fucking awesome. I think that's kind of what I did. I just went straight from like nothing to like the peak. It's that good. So
nice.
Right on.
Yeah. So, you know, try new media, I guess is my suggestion. And if that's graphic novels, then give them a whirl.
Cool.
Cool.
So, Bill.
So, I think the best thing for me to recommend is, God, they just repatched Diablo 3.
Uh-oh.
I'm back on the freak. I'm chasing the dragon, dude. A lot of people that were purists about Diablo 1 and 2 hated Diablo 3.
Yeah.
With plenty of justification. I was one of those people that would try to, I don't know, defend Diablo 3 because it's like somebody saying something bad about your family or something, you know? You find reasons to explain it away, but they fixed fucking everything about that game with the recent patch. And shockingly, 2 weeks before an expansion is being released that you can pay $40 for, the game's like perfect again. But dude, I'm losing sleep. I'm blowing off my friends.
Oh man!
Not eating, not bathing.
I've definitely, you've had some rings under your eyes.
I'm just clicking monsters, man. I'm clicking fucking monsters till they die.
Yeah, that's a lot of clicking.
Holy
shit. I do like how you described, like, when people, to defend Diablo 3, you mentioned that it was like your family. That was,
yes.
That was a telling statement.
It's true.
This level 57 monk is my fucking brother.
Yes.
You don't talk about my
brother.
It's
more like my
dad.
Child. I've watched him grow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, that's the hook of those games, right? I mean, the character development.
I think so. I think the hook of those games is it's just you're constantly opening presents in the form of chopping the heads off of random monsters, hoping that something awesome is going to pop out of their body.
Yeah.
No,
it's a lot of present opening.
Holy shit!
I'm assuming the clicking is not really the draw of the game.
No, I mean, the clicking is not the draw of the game. There's, now, you know, I don't want to say it's not like some mindless shit like you're playing Candy Crush Saga or something. There's a lot that goes into, like, the way you lay out your character. It's actually not a lot different than making a good War Machine list. You have, like, a strategy, and this is what I'm going to try to accomplish, and you minimize and maximize things in your list the same way you minimize and maximize your character's attributes and stuff, but it's... To play that game at the super high level, it isn't a lot different than playing War Machine on a super high level in some facets. Obviously, they're apples and oranges, but the min-maxing part of it is very much like list building for me. And it can be really satisfying to see something that you thought of succeed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, I know that's in a lot of RPGs or, you know, MMOs is... MMOs, it's the same way where you can't just be like willy-nilly just randomly picking skills or, you know, even like Borderlands or something like that. You have like a build in mind when you start, or you should have a build in mind when you start, and then seeing that kind of come together, I'm sure is kind of cool.
You got to have the build plan and you got to get the right gear to match that build. Borderlands is another good example of it.
Yeah.
Although I think Diablo is probably like threefold deeper than Borderlands on that.
Yeah. Cool, man.
Yeah.
Well, I know you're not alone. I've heard that recommendation like a million times. Everyone's like, holy fuck, this game's good. Finally.
It's amazing now.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. Well, it's everything we wanted it to be 2 years ago.
You know, and that's sometimes you just got to be patient with things you like. So.
Yeah.
Or, you know, don't like in this case.
Yeah.
They're a company that's definitely, like Blizzard gets it. Even if it takes them forever to get it right, they seem to get it right way more than anybody else.
It's true. Mm-hmm. All right, is that it?
I think that's it, guys. My Chris opened the bedroom door and gave me like that wrap it up finger swirl thing.
Drop the freaking iPad. Get in there.
Yeah, and she gave you like the hook or like the music over your talking.
Play me off keyboard, cat.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Oscars symphony kicked on just about now.
All right, guys.
All right,
I'll see you on Saturday.
All right, later.
All right, later.
Good luck.
Yep.
All right.